Hello, welcome to Keynote's weekly office hours. This week we're talking about Keynote's hosting solution. I'm Josh, the community manager. I'm joined, as usual, by our project lead, Bazil, lead developer, Doria, and today we're here to discuss how Keynote operates as an alternative to traditional cloud services. We also have Jonathan here. He's the one who did the lion's share of the work on hosting, so we'll be addressing some technical questions to him. So whether you're involved in tech, you're curious about decentralized computing, you're exploring new solutions, this is the discussion for you. So let's get started. Bazil, I'll put this one to you, I think, because it was something you're interested in. Well, actually, before I get started, do we want to talk about the hosting solution that we had back in the before days, or do we want to skip over that?
You mean hosting solution in which the, oh, you mean like during like orbit?
Yeah. If not, I'll just skip.
Sure. I think we can give a brief history of like in these kind of node-based systems, how people have thought of hosting.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, that was like for me.
Yeah, I mean, so basically, whenever you have these like P2P nodes, it's great that they can be run on, the canonical example is laptops, but you often get people wanting more predictable environments where they can like guarantee certain types of like connections or able to run like HTTP endpoints, stuff like that. And so for that reason, you want hosting. And there's always like a lot of controversy around it because it's like, oh, if we're doing real P2P, why do we want like, hosting? Doesn't that defeat the whole purpose? And I think people have talked about that enough that it's probably not worth going over too much. But the short answer is that it's often less that you want P2P and you want nodes that can be deployed very easily. Without a lot of upkeep in a variety of situations at a good price point. And so hosting is just like all of the software automation required to achieve that part about it being easy, a lot of different environments, not locked in various ways, stuff like that. So that's all. And people have done that in a lot of cases in orbit. And I think there is this interesting thing where the easier your node is to make work on, let's say, a laptop, the easier it is to do the hosting service. And I think one of the big issues people saw in Urbit was just that because there were high resource requirements and it was hard to keep nodes stable, that made hosting correspondingly hard. And so it took a lot of investment and effort to get that stable. And I know Jonathan, who's on here, did a lot of work on that and was able to get it, reasonably stable, subject to, kernel updates maybe breaking it. But I think, even on this end, is he's been able to get it working very fast with Keynode, where we're going to want to be depending on it a lot. So that's my intro.
Okay, well, moving from there into just the question of sort of you put it yesterday when we talked as what are the specific problems that we're trying to solve in computer science, or what are we aiming to solve beyond just introducing users to the new operating system? Bazil.
It's yeah, so I think in terms of introducing users to a new operating system, I think what you're trying to do is just make it so that if we have interesting applications or an interesting platform for developers to get on, people can do that with a minimum number of clicks. And even sometimes running your own node can be a lot of clicks, but definitely for, if there's just an interesting application that you want to do, drastically minimizing that. But let's get into maybe a little bit of the sort of actually what we have, what we're deploying right now, what people can expect. Because I think it's sometimes we can end up talking in abstractions too much.
Yeah, do we want to you want to give that one to Jonathan then? Jonathan, you can tell us what we're deploying and maybe also give us some technical background or specifications.
Sure, happy to. Right now the hosting framework is running in a production mode and is we're currently doing some internal testing on that right now. It's in, it's fully deployed, but we're just taken a close look at it ourselves just to make sure that everything is working as expected. So far, so good. Fingers crossed. The front end that connects to the back end framework is out there and allows the creation of accounts based off of your Twitter account. So if you've got a Twitter/X account, you can, with a single click, do the OAuth sign in with X, sign in with Twitter procedure. The account automatically gets created, and then you are entitled to launch a free node at that point. You pick a name that you want to register.
That might seem a little bit weird to people because we have, you know, an identity system. Definitely don't want our apps to be dependent on X. Like, why is it that the initial, like, sign-in requires you to do the X OAuth?
Sorry, I lost the mute button there for a second. I think the decision about that was it was a convenient, easy way to gate the number of free nodes that would be created. Obviously, not anything too hard to get around, but also just something that wouldn't invite somebody to go ahead and smash a, add node button repeatedly, or create multiple accounts very easily. So it's
we'll even have ways to do our hosting without an X account. This is literally just sort of minimal Sybil resistance, where because we're subsidizing people to sort of set up their initial networking keys and get on, that it's just like sort of an easily available thing where X makes it hard enough to make tons of accounts that it's a sort of decent, okay anti-spam measure, and we can implement as many of, or sort of use as many of those as we want. But that's all we're talking about here.
Yep. Yeah, and there literally is no tie between between X as a service and what's going on with the spawning of the free nodes. We could absolutely do an email and password self-registration system if we felt like something SMS gated, sign in with Ethereum, a few other mechanisms as well that we could potentially wind up adding to the mix that'll be dependent upon where we want to go, what future directions we want to do as far as account management is concerned. So that is the, the new front end, just to make it easy to kick off a new node for your own personal use. Once it's created, you get the address that it's running at. You've entered what password you want to use to protect your node in the registration process, and then you can access it that way. What's more, though, is we've made some extensions to the hosting framework to allow us to safely allow shell access to the machine that it's running on. So if you are really interested in what's going on, you can then get on the machine. You can create an SSH tunnel to it if you need to, do some testing or deploy things that you might want to try from localhost over to the remote node. You can look at the terminal session and interact directly with the Keynode terminal command prompt and work that way. And despite being in a hosted environment, this will be secure and protected just for you and the and accessing your own node.
I think that kind of gets into one of the topics of this discussion that is kind of interesting. It's what you described starts to sound like basically just a VPS, right? That you can SSH into and use for stuff, right? And that is in a very real sense like what it is, right? And then you have to ask, okay, well, why Keynote, right? Like, why this protocol on top of a VPS to do certain things? And my answer is that this gives you a bunch of stuff out of the box that like a VPS running Ubuntu does not, And that is where we start to get into some really interesting stuff that we wanted to talk about today.
Yeah, that's correct. Not only is it already up and running, you know, with all of the built-in internode networking taken care of, there are a bunch of other niceties that are included in there as far as backups and restorations, automatic upgrades of the Keynote binary as new releases come out, so you don't need to worry about managing that. A lot of crash tolerance and automatic restarts and other operations like that as well that you would, I'm sure, prefer not to have to manage on your own.
Yeah, and so like this is why like the title has this like claim about software deployment, right? Why you need this? This is generally like the set of things that developers look for when they're like, you know, gearing up to start paying AWS or a different provider or like a serverless tool, like what's that one that lets you host a website really easily? Not Vercel. Notion, but yeah, Vercel. Yeah. This is why developers use Vercel, right? This is it's a really important thing that doesn't come out of the box with a computer. Even, you know, a full, right, like bare metal OS. And this is especially damaging in crypto, where people they know that they want to be self-sovereign, but they don't know even where to start with that. And this is a really good place to start.
You kind of brought up an interesting way of thinking about it when you said that, like, bare metal doesn't get any of this, and sometimes people ask us like, why not Unix or something, or why not Linux? And I think the answer is that no one in any category actually thinks that like bare Linux is suitable. Like, you're always doing something to sort of transform the bare metal with some form of like integrated programming system. At the simplest, it's like on top of it, and doing AWS has much, much more stuff that they use as quite literally just software services and like an integrated programming thing on top of the bare metal. And so we're just like talking about here a different integrated programming environment on top of bare metal that we think is like more cohesive and simpler. And then actually gets you access to all the primitives you want.
Yeah, that's basically the fundamental claim. That's our thesis. And so far it's been pretty useful in the apps that we've talked about in previous spaces, more to come. We've been able to write a piece of software, right? A protocol that runs between nodes. And then when the usually one developer that was writing it sort of finishes it and is ready, they can publish it and we can download it to our personal nodes or download it to a bunch of nodes to test it, and it just works. So that's been really cool because that piece of machinery is already functional and is going to get more robust as we keep going.
So one thing I think people might have a hard time with that might feel like we're a solution looking for a problem is, why would a user, though, want to be able to do, like, because if we're talking about a user setting up hosting here and then they're going to run applications, what we're really talking about is a user being able to deploy software themselves that they and others can access. And so why is that desirable over, essentially offloading it to corporations, whether it's a startup, a service, and, you know, anything like that. The current pattern is very much for that to be offloaded to those. And I guess you could say that part of the answer is probably that our hosting service sort of is that in some ways. But why is it bad to, like, you know, I guess, have the user access a very specifically defined deployed service as opposed to ours, which is like, you know, a much more general system on top of like the bare metal?
Well, the answer there, of course, is the composability and the integrations. Because when you have these sort of one service per use case solutions that exist today and are effective, they're effective for that single problem, but you run into this issue of your services not being able to really speak to each other. And that's useful in and of itself. And then I would go even further and say in crypto specifically, which we're all familiar with, sometimes those services just are not suitable at all because they're not geared for that permissionless adversarial environment. So obviously deploying a front end to Vercel that's going to be, you know, talking to the Tornado Cash contract is not going to fly. But you don't have to get that high of stakes to see what I call an impedance mismatch between these corporate services and crypto. So, yeah.
Yeah, that seems about right to me in terms of how to think about it. Cool. So I think just to sort of reorient everyone in terms of what we're looking at here and what we're talking about, we're basically just talking about why it's important for us to have this, like, I guess you can think of what we're releasing right now, if you want to, because a lot of our people here are fairly technical, as kind of a little like transformer of bare metal in the cloud that lets you turn, and we say bare metal, we just mean like when you're basically renting a computer or a VPS that's just Linux, even if it's time shared with other people. And so we're talking about something here where we can transform bare metal into something that Keynode can operate on, which then lets us, not for all use cases, but there's a number of use cases in which it lets us already be better than, let's say, AWS, which also is a transformer of bare metal into, you know, an integrated programming system on top. And we're not better for all use cases, or maybe even the majority yet, but there are a number for which, like, you know, our transformation is already better. And I think this is sort of jumping ahead a little to some stuff that we're writing right now. But, you know, we're writing something that's like a personal Telegram bot, which is basically you deploy a Telegram bot running on your Keynote, because the Telegram bot actually needs to live somewhere in order to work. And that Telegram bot, then you can access it via your own private chat, start sending information to it, like, you know, voice notes, images, text, and it'll just ingest it and send it directly to your Keynote. And your Keynote, in order for that sentence to make sense, actually has to be deployed. It has to be running. It has to work. And so this is actually something that Amazon's bare metal transformers and, you know, Microsoft's, whoever's, Hetzner's, are not well set up to, like, do. And you actually cannot download, you know, sort of easily get a software package from them that gives you access to transformed bare metal that can run an integrated programming system that works.
I mean, look at the Twitter filter we talked about last week. This is an example of something that we talked about this last week, but if you were a developer that wanted to build that and give it to people, right? Like, you would have to host the back end somewhere. And that becomes like this arduous issue for you as the developer. Whereas if the user is, the user doesn't have to run their own, the user doesn't have to be a sysadmin, the user has to have access to a deployment target that they can hit privately. Right, so that's what we've set up here. So it's, yeah.
Yep, so just like we're gonna sort of keep probably belaboring these points over and over again until people get it, or as our apps come out, we show how that's working. But there are very useful properties to letting anyone, to having the unit that's sort of responsible for that bare metal be, let's say, a company plus a user, like in this case, sort of a generic company, like our hosting thing, plus a user, rather than a specific company related to running one app plus another company. So AWS is the sort of locus of responsibility, is Amazon for running the, you know, transformers, plus the company who's, like, you know, centralized service you're using. And in this case, it's the user who's mostly responsible for, you know, paying the bills in some sense or being subsidized, and then our hosting service as a company. And that's a really nice decomposition of the problem, because then the user can install lots of stuff from lots of developers, and we can amortize that, like, you know, bare metal transformer support across all of those developers. So I'll stop on there, because we've talked about this topic a lot in different forms, but I think it's pretty much almost every time we have a space, we want to keep coming back to that, because that's, like, you know, really the central topic and thesis here. And so for each specific thing we're looking at, we want to sort of look at how it fits into that overall framework of, you know, transforming various forms of bare metal to be a deployment target.
Well, you kind of touched on this just a second ago, but will you discuss for just a moment what the sort of monetary vision is and how this goes from users being paid for to a sustainable model, or maybe it's always users paid for, but what are going to be like the revenue streams?
I see. Yeah. So again, going back to anyone here who's familiar with Urbit, I think people always gravitated toward hosting as being a business model for whatever reason. Maybe it was just sort of the obvious thing to do there. I think what we're looking at is because we can make hosting fairly stable and cheap to deliver, this is not to denigrate Jonathan's work, is almost to praise it, but he's done a very good job in a short time creating something that can become very stable. And because that's not, hasn't been a huge economic investment, and the ongoing maintenance for that piece of, you know, sort of that software package is not huge, and it can be worth it for a sort of a general project like ours to sustain indefinitely. And for other, you know, any company that builds on us, it's very, you know, easy to, that public good is very easy to sustain indefinitely. We definitely want to move towards hosting being a basically public good. Like it's a software package that anyone can deploy, that we try to like spread the expertise for how to run it. We probably spend money to keep maintaining it indefinitely to make sure it keeps, you know, that it keeps working well. And we have a clear like point of responsibility for that. But not looking for, you know, hosting to get this like lock in and become its own super valuable company, because the most valuable things are all the stuff that gets built because you've like unlocked that deployment target. And I think now we will then in that model, you then end up like giving some money on a per user basis to whatever bare metal you're hosting on. It does let you use like, you know, the cheapest or easiest bare metal you can find, which is really good. You can use stuff like, you know, Hetzner or the basic versions of DigitalOcean, which is what we're using for this. But you don't have to pay for the more bespoke and complex cloud services. So that's nice. In terms of like, you know, what happens long-term in terms of paying for it, I think what you do is you bootstrap it by having apps that, you know, whose users have enough of a customer lifetime value that it's fine for them to pay 10 cents to a couple dollars a month for their users to run, depending on how sort of beefy their app is and what the customer lifetime value is. There's many applications, particularly in crypto, where the value of a customer, lifetime value of a customer is in the hundreds or sometimes thousands of dollars. So that's actually very easy to subsidize. And then once you have that, you definitely can have other apps free ride on that. And that's usually going to be a good thing for the app that's subsidized, because it probably makes their base thing more compelling, because there's sort of more stuff that can be plugged into it and that it can do. So even though other people are free riding on them, it's almost this like sort of free riding that you want, where they're also making your initial like proposition more valuable and providing basically like, you know, plugins for it over time.
Yeah, I mean, you can conceptualize hosting as giving somebody access to an app store, right? Like one thing I want to bring up that's like a slightly different direction to get to the same conclusion is that if you build a system that is reasonably efficient in terms of compute, in terms of logistical setup, which I think we've done. Again, it just has to be reasonable. But you end up in a situation where you're talking about a very thin margin over bare metal or bare VPS or whatever, right? And so like what the value add has to be like in the app store or in like the thing that you're gating. So that's how I think of it, is like, yeah, you're giving somebody access to this app store. And that's where the value is going to be generated, is in the actual stuff that people are using.
Okay.
That's a reasonable way of looking. And I'll just like sum up by, again, another topic that we always come back to here, in addition to sort of deployment targets, what's on top of the bare metal, is like economics, because I think just like the economics of software are really interesting. And one of our other sort of big picture goals
is making our own contribution to like substantially improving those economics. So we always try to sort of stay focused on that big picture of how does this play into the economics of software development, deployment, company formation, protocol formation, and you know, are we fitting into that in a reasonable long-term way?
I've got a couple more questions, but I just want to check. Do you guys have anything that you want to cover that we didn't discuss? Also, anybody listening, you know, you can raise your hand and ask a question if you want to. So I'll make sure that you guys have an opportunity to do that. But just to our speakers, is there anything about hosting that you wanted to say? Go ahead, Jonathan.
Yeah, I think one additional point to that, certainly the last point that was brought up was absolutely true, that the margin is small over bare metal as far as what needs to be provided in order to keep a hosted instance up and running and usable. I would say though that there's actually a bit of a time profile element to this, where the most complex and sort of peak of energy of activation to get this chemical reaction started occurs right at the beginning, and hosting has an important role to play, I think, in making that as easy as possible. People will become experts in Keynode by looking at it and being able to work with it. But getting it started and not worrying about, oh, did I get it right? Did I somehow screw up the networking configuration? Did I mess this up? Is this why I'm having trouble? Etc. To be able to avoid all of that right from the beginning and just allow people to start having something that works, to be able to jump right into an app store and see things that are functional, I think is pretty important.
Yeah. No. I absolutely. I think one of the also the nice things there, just if people don't know about the protocol, is like you can take your Keynode instance and zip it up and move it to a new computer. And so that kind of like behavior is very useful, because there could be a very natural transition of what you're talking about, where it's a one click get started, you're doing stuff, having fun, and then you can take it somewhere else and change hosting providers or run it locally or whatever you want. So yeah, it's a nice property of the system.
Yeah, and that's actually been a nice side effect that wasn't even originally contemplated when I was thinking about having it segregated to individual users and individual access. If you're doing anything in your home directory, if you're creating spooling off files from this, or creating a directory of information or something as a result of operations on your Keynote, that's also portable in the exact same way. Basically, your entire instance could be packaged up, archived, and sent to you. Not a problem.
You know, the creator of Docker once said that if Wasm had existed when he went to create Docker, then he probably wouldn't have created it. So it's a fun little tidbit.
All right. I guess my final question then is, when can users expect this? I think that people listening want to know when they're going to be able to expect to get on themselves. So when is this going to happen for them? Ballpark it for me, at least. We don't have to hold anybody to timelines, but what's it going to look like to get a Keynote hosted instance?
I don't know if you want me answering that.
that one might be one for Bazil. I will say I got to try it out yesterday. I opened up my instance and tweeted about it. But it's pretty smooth onboarding. I noticed as well, I think, Jonathan, that there's the SSH link there, like the for people who want to SSH in, you have that right there on the front end as well. So that was pretty cool to see.
Exactly. Yeah, you've got your own personal account information to be able to get right in. You can stick your own public key right in the authorized keys file if you want, and then just, you know, SSH with friction-free as much as you want right into your own instance.
Super cool. Also, you can use our software development toolkit called Kit. You can connect it to a remote node. So you can actually get a hosted node and start developing on it in your, your terminal, your local terminal really easily. It's really cool. Shout out to Nick for making that. As regarding when people are going to get to do this, I don't think there are any blockers. I think maybe we could say Monday. Is that right, Bazil? Also, this is going to be for, I believe this will be available to people who got the Genesis Bird little, you know, keynote NFT signal of support. But we're also going to be opening up that a little bit more in the near future as well. So that'll be cool for anybody who wants to get on the hosting platform soon. I don't know how much more I can say. I mean, yeah, take over, Bazil.
Like, talking roughly on Monday, like, it's time to get on. It's a little later. It is what it is. But right around then, I think.
So, yeah, pretty exciting. I've got one of these nodes running. It's great.
Timoth, I noticed that you raised your hand to speak, so I gave you speaker privileges if you want to ask
a question. Thank you. Yeah, I'm wondering, do you guys expect devs to mostly run their own nodes, or is it going to be like so much easier to just use a hosting provider or even like boot up your own hosting provider and just use that?
That's a great question. To me, it's like really 50-50 right now. I'm genuinely not sure, because when I'm developing in user space, I am running a node or three on my laptop. But I haven't really played around as much with the new Kit Connect feature, and it might be a lot easier because you do have like pretty direct access to the node. And the other thing too is, like, you know, there's direct nodes and there's indirect nodes on the networking protocol. Direct nodes are revealing their IP endpoint like publicly on the network, so they're firing messages directly peer to peer. Indirect nodes go through a router. When I run nodes on my laptop, they're always indirect because I don't want the local networking situation that I'm in to affect my work. Hosted nodes are really nice for that. Indirect nodes are really nice for that too, which is why I'm 50-50. But yeah, we'll see.
So damn. Also, like, in addition to, like, so there's like a laptop, there's on a hosting service, and then there's like, I booted up my own VPS with some, like, with like DigitalOcean or something, right? I don't know if that's on the table, or if you guys are just like thinking just hosting providers or laptops.
No, that's extremely valid. You can the hosting platform is open source, so you could set up your own. I think that'd be a little more involved, but you certainly could. If you want to test at scale, that might make sense.
Okay. Anything else? Any other questions, I mean, from the audience, or anything else that the speakers want to cover before we close out? This is your moment. No? All right. In that case, I'll thank everybody for joining us. So make sure to mark your calendars, because we do this at the same time every week, noon Eastern, on our X account. Tomorrow there'll be a blog post about our hosting solution, so look out for that. And it sounds like maybe Monday or sometime next week, our NFT holders will get to check out the hosting solution. And then, you know, just stay tuned, because it could be you next. Also, check out the links that are posted below the space. You'll find our developer docs if you write code. You'll also find links to our Discord, where the whole team hangs out pretty much all day, every day. You can learn about the project. You can ask questions in our support channel. You can just hang out and chat with us if you want to. So until next time, thank you to Bazil. Thank you to Doria. Thank you to Jonathan. And goodbye to everyone. We'll see you next week.
Take it easy.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye.